Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Malice in the Mitten. I am your host, Tracy Preston, along with my best friend, Christine. Hey, Christine.
Hey, Tracy.
This is season one, episode 5. This is about Catherine Woods and Gwendolyn Graham, the Alpine Matter Murders, aka the Lethal Lovers. This is a really long story, so we're going to cut it into two parts. This is part one. Here we go. This story here came to fruition when my husband Todd, mother-in-law, and I were going through an antique store in Marshall, Michigan. In the back of the store, they had a large collection of books, which I love rummaging through. And I stumbled across a book that caught my attention called Forever in 5 Days by Lowell Caufiel. I hope I'm saying this correctly. Christine, how would you pronounce his last name?
Yeah, I think you're saying it right. It's Lowell Caufiel.
I'm so happy that I came across it when we were antiquing. Leave it to me to gravitate toward the books versus the antiques. Todd's looking at antiques. I'm looking at the books. The cover picture is of two women, along with the words, an account of obsessive love and murder that rocked Grand Rapids, Michigan. I was like, wait, what? I never heard of this before. But then again, at the time, I was also in 11th grade, so, you know, gotta cut me a break there. So naturally, I snatched up this little book. Well, it's not a little book. It's kind of a big book. And I actually had this book for a couple of years before I read it and before I even thought of doing this podcast. So talk about a subconscious purchase with a purpose. Forever in 5 Days is my main source of material for this story, along with a show on Discovery ID called Snapped, Killer Couples. Catherine Wood and Gwendolyn Graham were two women in their early 20s when their paths would cross. At the first glance of Gwen, Kathy was immediately drawn to her. Finally, the opportunity to speak with Gwen presented itself, and eagerly, Kathy made her move. It wasn't long before they were in a relationship that was filled with love and jealousy, quite a bit of it, actually. To cement the relationship, they made a pact that would bind them together forever. They had murdered 5 elderly residents at the Alpine Manor Nursing Home in Walker, Michigan. It is suspected that there could have been more victims. However, it's difficult to prove as the residents were quite elderly, some were nonverbal, and it was not uncommon for patients to pass away at the manor.
I kind of feel like you picked this story because you're trying to come at me, Trey.
Nobody knows those details but us right now.
Why are we talking about murderous lesbians? I mean, are you trying to say something about me, Tracy?
You just gave it away. I wasn't going to say anything.
I just thought it was funny.
What are you, a murdering lesbian? What's going on? And you know what? As I was reading and writing, I'm like, oh boy, she's going to get me.
All right. So go ahead. What did we find out about these girls?
So before we get into the nitty-gritty details of how and why these murders were committed, I'm going to dial it back. You know how I like to do that. To the childhoods of both Catherine and Gwendolyn, you will see how their experiences as young children and young women molded them toward the malice they brought to themselves, the residents of Alpine Manor, the families whose loved ones were murdered, and the community of Walker, Michigan. So, here we go. Catherine May Wood was born on March 7, 1962, in Soap Lake, Washington. In the book Forever in 5 Days, Kathy's mother, Pat, described Kathy as a little girl who loved to read and started reading at a very young age. Kathy's mother really didn't pay much attention to her and would find any little reason to punish her. And that punishment was always the same, sending Kathy away to her bedroom. With a lack of love and attention from her mother and father, Kathy didn't mind being alone in her room. After all, she was always alone. For Kathy, reading would provide an escape. Reading would allow her to be and do anything she could imagine. According to Caufiel's book, Kathy had read hundreds and hundreds of books. As a young girl, Kathy was a little bit awkward for her age, being that she was much taller and heavier than other girls that she went to school with. Kathy didn't have many friends, unlike her sister Barbara, who was quite popular. Kathy's father, John, and mother, Pat, had dated in high school. After graduation, Kathy's father enlisted in the Air Force. When he returned home from boot camp, John and Pat were married before he left for Vietnam with a canine unit. It was not unusual for most couples to marry before men went off to war. When her father's tour of duty in Vietnam ended, John returned home, but as you can imagine, with all he had seen and done, he was no longer the man he was when he left. Now, back in civilian life, their father was working the night shift, which meant that he would be sleeping during the day when the girls were home. When their father was awake, he consumed alcohol daily until he became heavily intoxicated and would verbally abuse his wife, Pat. Kathy's mother was not a very affectionate woman or loving toward her daughters. Pat preferred their cats and dogs over her girls. Frequently, Kathy would often be found sitting in the corner of a room alone, playing chess, which, by the way, she had taught herself how to play. As I mentioned, Kathy was tall for her age and overweight. However, unlike most kids, Kathy was never teased because, according to her mother, Kathy, she would, quote, pound them to death. According to the show,
what does that mean?
Like, beat them up. She was a big girl, and, like, nobody messed with her. According to the show Snapped, Killer Couples, when Kathy was a young teenager, she began a relationship with a girl named Debbie. And for the first time, Kathy felt loved, appreciated, and accepted. She would hide this relationship with Debbie from her mother and father, especially her mother, as she was quite conservative. Because of this, Kathy came up with the name of David for Debbie. This is how she presented it to her mother. But as all lies rise to the surface, sooner or later, Kathy's mom would find out that David was really a girl named Debbie. Once Pat found that out, she had stopped any further involvement between the two. The relationship Kathy had with Debbie would be a tool that Kathy would use to manipulate her future relationships as to why she was so messed up when things weren't going well. She would explain that when she and David were intimate with one another, David would use something really hard on her and hurt her when they had sex. This is when she discovered that David was really a girl named Debbie. Sounds confusing, doesn't it? Well, that's the whole mind game about it. Kathy clearly knew that Debbie was a girl. In fact, Debbie was a friend of Barbara, her sister. And I do wonder if Kathy pursued this relationship with Debbie purposely out of spite toward her sister. When Kathy was 17 years old, she met a young man named Ken Wood. After just a few months of dating, Kathy became pregnant. Within a year, Kathy and Ken had married, and shortly after they had a baby girl, they named her Jamie. Kathy had started nursing school, but just before she was close to finishing, she decided to quit. No matter how Ken encouraged her to finish, Kathy had made up her mind and quit. Just like her mother, Kathy did not enjoy motherhood. She was very much detached from Jamie. And I'm not surprised because this is the only example of motherhood she was taught by Pat. For example, in Chaffield's book, he describes Ken, Kathy, and baby Jamie at a baseball game. A ball came flying up into the stadium and it was headed in Kathy's direction. In order for Kathy to protect herself from getting hit, she held up baby Jamie in front of her as a shield. A normal mother's reaction would be to shield and protect the child, not the other way around. Let's put into perspective how lethal this could have been if Jamie was actually struck by a baseball. According to an article by sportsanalytics.berkeley.edu, when a bat hits a baseball, it's called exit velocity. Quote, this is the speed with which the ball leaves the bat. Typically, an average exit velocity for a major league baseball player is approximately 90 plus miles per hour, which usually indicates a home run.
Even if it was 40 miles per hour, if it would have hit that child would not be here anymore.
No, I could only imagine.
So forget about 90 plus miles an hour.
Yeah.
That's insane.
It's totally insane.
She's already not looking good.
Not at all. So not only did Kathy not like being a mother, she also didn't like being a wife. She stopped cooking and cleaning altogether. She no longer wanted the life she had begun with a husband and child. She wanted to escape the home and life they had built. Kathy didn't know how to be a wife or mother, as she never saw how a loving relationship functions between a man and a woman, or what a relationship is like with a mother that loves and protects her children. What Kathy did know with 100% certainty was that she was not happy. She knew how to manipulate any situation to get what she wanted, and what she wanted was to quit nursing school, get a job, and get out of the house and away from Ken and Jamie. It was 1985 when Kathy got a job and started working at Alpine Manor. She started working as a nursing assistant on the night shift. Throughout her shift, she would catch glimpses of other female nursing assistants making out with one another. They would be sneaking away to empty rooms or just in plain sight in the darkened hallways. This was something that intrigued Kathy. Now that Kathy is a grown woman, married with a child, living on her own, her mother no longer had control over what she could and couldn't do. Nightly, she was witnessing the freedom these women were having with one another. Kathy not only watched this happening between single women, she also witnessed women who were married to men cheating on their husbands with other women at the manor.
I can relate to that little tidbit, and I think everybody really can. Because if you think about indoctrination and pounding over the head of you will not do what I tell you not to do from your parent. I mean, I think society has kind of weeded that out, and especially the generations of today. they don't have that mind game that plays in their own inner monologue. But for people that were born in this era, even in my era, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, there were just certain things you couldn't do. It's like you thought you weren't allowed to. And now she's looking at everybody and they're doing it. And she was like, but I was punished for that. And I wasn't allowed to do that. Here she is as a grown woman, just realizing that she's allowed to do things like that.
Yeah.
Not that they're good things. I mean, nobody should be heavy petting in a hospital hallway. And nobody should be cheating on their spouse. It happened.
Right.
And so the eye-opening fact of that, that's no joke. That's a real thing. Adult people will all of a sudden realize, oh, wait a minute, I can do that.
Truly is like a mind game, because you're like, wait a minute, I am an adult. I pay my own bills. Nobody can tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
We're going to try this out. Okay. After the night shift ended, they would all go out to the local bar. They were free to make out and hook up with one another as they partied. Kathy was enjoying her new lifestyle and felt free to explore it fully without anyone telling her she couldn't or that she shouldn't. She had never felt so free, liberated, loved, wanted, and accepted. For the first time in her life, Kathy belonged to a group of friends. So there you go. Exactly what you were talking about.
It's a slippery slope that you pull that thread in the wrong direction. This woman is about to show us how pulling in the wrong direction, when you find that authenticity, how you should sit with it a little bit and think it through.
So as Kathy embraced her newfound sexual freedom, she had made the decision to separate from her husband, Ken. So that's a good thing. Not only had she decided she no longer wanted Ken, she also no longer wanted to be a mother. So when Ken left the home, Kathy made sure and made it very clear that he would be taking Jamie with him and that Jamie was his responsibility, not hers.
And I do believe that not all women are made and cut out to be mothers. I do believe that. Not everybody can think the same. That's why we have a world, so we can have all the thoughts in it. But once you do have a child, at least for me, I do not understand the perspective of having a child, watching it grow, and then be like, yeah, no thanks. You take this because this is your responsibility. Like, that right in itself, to me, screams sociopath.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe I'm just being judgy because of how I feel about motherhood. Like, how do you not just take care of them forever and a day?
Exactly. I mean, it's your responsibility. I felt the same exact way. My mommy feelings got into a big knot, especially like when we just start off with a baseball game. I'm like, oh boy, this is bad. Right? Because that's the thing. Before you have a child, you can't understand what it's like. The moment they're born, at least in me and most women that I know, something clicks like, whoa, this is the best love of my life. It doesn't matter how much you thought you loved before. You have no idea until that baby is born, that love that you could just do anything for them. Anything. I'd get run over by a train to save my daughters without thinking about it.
Yeah, but there are mothers too that they don't bond like that with their kids. I can almost see that perspective. I'm not saying I feel it personally.
Right.
But at least my mind can comprehend. And then once I can comprehend their perspective or perceptions, then I can have empathy for them, right? That's what empathy is, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is you got to step in someone else's shoes for a minute and feel their feel. For women that say, I'm not cut out to be a mom, and they acknowledge that, and that's fine. I'm not judging that. It's the callousness in which this woman, Kathy, made sure to make it clear that I'm not taking Jamie. Jamie's your responsibility. It's like a really nice way to say, it's your problem.
Right,
it's crazy to me.
Now that we have a baseline on Kathy, let's learn about Gwen. Gwendolyn Gale Graham was born on August 6, 1963 in California. Gwen's family seemed to never really stay in place for long. When Gwen was young, they left California and moved to Indiana, and then finally settled on a farm in Tyler, Texas, all by the time Gwen was 9 years old. She had a couple of siblings, but her mother said that Gwen was never an affectionate child like the others, even as a baby. Therefore, her mother never held her or showed her any signs of affection. Her father was an abusive man. When Gwen was just a little girl, he would teach her the ways of the world, such as showing Gwen slaughtering of pigs and the beheading of chickens. It's kind of a lot when you're just a teeny little girl.
Okay, well, that's psychotic. And
yeah.
We know that from all the serial killers.
Yeah.
So this is not looking good.
No. She's got a rough start. All right. So when Gwen didn't do exactly what her father told her to do, his go-to punishment would be to stick her head in a toilet and flush it. It is because of this punishment that Gwen developed a phobia of drains and toilets. To avoid her father's punishments, she did what she was told to the best of her ability. As a young girl on the farm in Texas, Gwen had a dog that she loved so much. One day, her father told her that she had to take her dog out in the woods, by the creek, shoot it, and bury it. If she didn't do as he said, Gwen knew exactly what was to come. So with a heavy heart and a gun at her side, Gwen took her dog out into the woods, stopping at the creek as she was instructed by her father. As hard as it was for her, she pulled the trigger, shooting her dog in the head so it would be over as quickly as possible. Ugh. As Gwen grew up and started to mature, her father began to sexually molest and abuse her. Her mother, from what I can tell in the book by Chafiel, didn't protect her from him. As time went on with the continued abuse, Gwen started cutting herself. She was smoking cigarettes and would extinguish them out on her arms. To Gwen, this served two purposes. One, to let her know that she could still feel, and two, she wanted her father to see what he was doing to her. Gwen would purposely wear short sleeves or shirts without any sleeves so her father would have a daily reminder of the abuse she was suffering. I imagine she was hoping it would make her unattractive to him as well. As a teenager, Gwen finally got away from the farm and her father. She left with a man she had met. He was a truck driver, a man she thought she could trust, a man she thought was her friend. This was a man who knew the secrets of what was happening between her and her father. Gwen finally felt like she was safe and in control of her life. But sadly, one night, the man she thought she could trust also tried to molest her and wouldn't stop his advances no matter how hard she fought. As soon as she had the opportunity, Gwen got away from him as well. She now found herself in Michigan and was determined to take control of her life, leaving men out of the picture altogether. Gwen had inspirations of going to school to become a paramedic. She desperately wanted to help people in their time of need, but before Gwen could go to school, she needed money to survive. She too found Alpine Manor and started working as a nurse's aide, and this is where the paths of Catherine Wood and Gwendolyn Graham would intersect. Alpine Manor is located in Walker, Michigan. According to Wikipedia, Walker became a township on December 30th in 1837, the second to be organized in Kent County, which initially comprised all of the land in the county north of Grand River. In 1838, part of the township was split off from Ada Township. The earliest settlers were Canadian immigrants. Walker was established as a city in 1962 to prevent further annexation of the area into Grand Rapids. Walker is approximately 6.4 miles east of Grand Rapids. The crime rate in Walker at this time in 1987 was just a drop in the bucket, and the murder rate was even lower than that. Walker's population in 1987 was approximately 11,000, according to the website worldpopulationreview.com. The city of Walker gained national attention when Gwen and Kathy committed their murders as workers at the nursing home in 1987. It is at Alpine Manor where Kathy met 23-year-old Gwendolyn Graham. Both were working the night shift. Gwen was openly gay, and she seemed to fit right in with a group of women working at Alpine. She quickly found herself in a relationship with one of her co-workers. Gwen was very caring and enjoyed spending time with the elderly at the manor. One night, she was sitting with a resident that had passed away. As Gwen had never seen someone at the time of their passing, this experience was really upsetting for her. She cried and cried over the death that she had witnessed. This is when Kathy made her move and began consoling Gwen. This moment in time was the beginning of their relationship. Together, they bonded over the many conversations of their difficult childhoods. Kathy was extremely intelligent, and this was an attraction for Gwen. And Gwen was extremely tough and rough around the edges, and this was an attraction for Kathy.
My mind immediately wants to think, oh, maybe this was just the first murder that she did, and she was crying because she killed her, and she really didn't mean to kill her. She was just trying to choke her out for a minute. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, that's where my mind goes. It doesn't track.
Right.
That you're going to be hella upset. But it would track if that's your first murder and you don't know what to do about it, so you cry. That's a little white girl defenseless thing is when I've done something really bad, I'm just going to cry about it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And someone's going to take pity on me and not question me. They're going to just be empathetic towards me and not question me.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm calling BS. I'm calling sus on that one.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I'll leave it at that.
All right. Because as of right now, the murders haven't happened, but... Who's to say something wonky didn't go on, right?
Yeah, they haven't started because you don't know that they started. That doesn't mean that they didn't actually start.
After spending many nights talking and getting to know one another, Kathy and Gwen began a sexual relationship. Kathy at the time was still married to Ken. and Gwen was also dating another nursing assistant at the manor. After only a few months of dating one another, Kathy only wanted to be with Gwen and wanted Gwen to make the same commitment to her. Kathy was a very jealous lover and made it clear to Gwen that she didn't want her to be with anyone other than her. To prove her love to Gwen, Kathy told Ken that she wanted a divorce and she wanted Ken to have full custody of their daughter, Jamie. I get it that she's not in love with this guy anymore, and I completely understand that she's finally, for the first time in her life, able to freely explore being in the same-sex relationship that she's always been drawn to. But the whole not wanting your child at all just breaks my heart for Jamie, and it stems from the lack of love Kathy never received as a child. It's as a child that we need love and affection the most. Yes, of course, we need love throughout our lives, but it's when we are little that love and human touch promotes healthy brain development as it molds us into who we are going to be and how we will treat others. Kathy never had that, and now she is repeating the cycle with her daughter, which sadly is how this process evolves and never breaks. Just imagine for a minute being a little girl, watching your mom love and adore your cats and your dogs, but never giving that love to you. Not long after kicking Ken and baby Jamie out of the house, Gwen was invited to move in. With their relationship in full swing, Gwen started to introduce bondage and fetishes into the relationship, and Kathy couldn't get enough of it. Kathy could feel she was falling in love with Gwen, and her feelings of jealousy were growing. She had someone that she loved, and no one was going to take that from her. Kathy would do anything to keep Gwen.
Okay, but remember what I said about that slippery slope of when you're finding your authenticity, you pull too far along on that string, and all of a sudden we're in BDSM land.
Mm-hmm.
And they've both fallen off the cliff. They're both on that slippery slope.
And a flaming hot ball of fire. All right, everybody. Well, that concludes part one of Gwendolyn Graham and Catherine Woods and the Alpine Manor murders. Come back next week for part two. Thanks for joining, everyone. All right, bye, guys. See you soon.